Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday, January 14th. This is the Authentic Persuasion live show. So glad that you're here, so glad that you're watching. Just getting started in the day. It's 8 a.m. Pacific time, getting ramped up, as you can tell, getting things going. Very excited for this year so far. I know, you know, and I kind of mentioned this last week when talking to my guest, but, you know, obviously the calendar change, 2021, a lot of things didn't change for most of the world. You know, there's still a pandemic. There's still economic issues. There's still business issues, personal issues, all those things. You know, just because the calendar changed doesn't mean much. And what's interesting is how many times so far in the last 2 weeks, I have seen shifts on my side, things coming together, other people's things happening. So hopefully that is occurring for you on your side. If you're watching this, if you're tuned in, welcome. Make sure to say hi in the comments. Leave a question. I am going to be doing some fun stuff. And today, I don't have a guest, so I'm going at this solo. So we'll go. I have some topics I want to cover. Also, if you're watching and you have any questions, put them into the comment box so that I can address those. You know, I had a very interesting experience yesterday I wanted to share. I was invited to speak as a guest lecturer for Oregon State University's professional sales course. So there's actually colleges now that have professional sales programs, some of which you can actually earn a bachelor's degree in sales or sales related business, and actual full length official credited courses on professional selling and selling strategies, buyer behaviors, and whatnot. So I actually had the privilege yesterday of being the guest lecturer for a class of around 30 students, obviously all virtual, which makes this even better for the group of students because instead of, you know, needing somebody who's local or somebody who's traveling there, you know, they can bring in remote people, virtual people like myself. And it was an honor. If you've listened to me at all, if you know me at all, if you've watched or heard any of my content or read anything, really what my focus is on shifting the way sales is done, ultimately with the goal and the mission where prospects, buyers, the community at large actually looks forward to and wants to engage with salespeople because they see that as a profession, they want the help. Similar to how you, when you're sick, you want to go to a doctor. You may not always like what they're going to tell you, but you go to them because you know their intention is to help you get well. And so that's what I'm focused on and why I do what I do. And to be able to do that and help influence and affect people in college who have the goal of being a professional salesperson, corporate, enterprise sales, you know, wherever their life may take them, to be able to impact them in some way was huge. And I would recommend and suggest and hope that anybody watching this, anybody in this tribe of people who want to elevate the way sales is done, is find a way to mentor, impact, and, you know, just alter the way that the future generations do it instead of, you know, what's classically done or classically hand down. So that was pretty amazing. If you have a chance to support any of those programs, it's great. Shout out if I know none of them are watching because I think they're in class right now, but to the students in that class from yesterday at Oregon State University, that was such a blast, so fun. They came up with some really good stuff with some breakout sessions. And so technology is amazing that we were able to do that, simulate a lot of it. So that was really cool. If you're watching this, I had put it into the stuff leading up to this, but if you'd like to win copies of the book, so I have the book. We got Selling with Authentic Persuasion. If you want to win that, say hello, leave a question, put a comment in there, and you know, I'm going to pick some names here towards the end. Also, if you haven't seen it, because I want to talk about this, let me find where it is. I have published two new books, if you haven't seen them yet. So I am doing a series called A Sales Consultant's Guide to. The first one was Overcoming Objections. Yours and theirs. So your own internal objections and your customer's objections. And then the second one, which just came out on Friday last week, is A Sales Consultant Guide to Motivating Your Sales Team So You Both Can Win, for especially new sales leaders, team leads, sales managers, people who are struggling with figuring out how to motivate their sales team and get them to perform as they would like them to, or they think they should be. And so make sure to check out those two. They're short, they're tactical, they're very focused on, you read this in one sitting, take these lessons, take these principles and put them into place. So you'll see that they're short, but there's no fluff, not many stories, just straight into tactical application of those principles to help you overcome objections, motivate your sales team. And then I plan on doing about 10 to 15 of those. So look for more of those to come. Obviously, if you have Amazon Kindle Unlimited, they're free through there. So it's great. Just pick that up, read it, and then, you know, put it into place. If you haven't seen this, I'm just going through some general housekeeping stuff because I'm also excited about these things and wanted to share it here, is that if you haven't seen it yet, tomorrow, January 15th, if you're watching this live, is the Girls Who Sell launch party. So if you're on LinkedIn, you can find it. It's actually being hosted through Eventbrite. So if you just go to Girls with a Z, whosell.com, or you just search for it online and the launch party. It's free. It's a launch party. We're kicking that off. I had the pleasure of being asked to be a advisory board member for that organization, which is really exciting because if you know me, and this is interesting because this is one of the questions that came up yesterday by one of the students in the Oregon State University class, was that, you know, why am I involved and why is that something I'm excited about? And obviously you'll find out tomorrow. But if you know me at all, you know that I think anybody can be effective in sales. I think women can be very effective because of their general nature and the general way that the public, the buying public, distrusts male salespeople more by default, because that's where all the stories come from. That's who's generally the used car salesman, right? Even if that's not fair, that's generally what happens. And so women have a inherent advantage of just being more trusting because they're not a salesman, right? And so with that, when somebody in as a woman or a man harnesses the power and effectiveness of persuading, of being authentic, of selling in an appropriate way that's helping your customers, they can do really well. And women in sales are very much underrepresented relative to the population as a whole. And if we think about diversity, not just ethnic diversity, but if we think of diversity in many ways, like I had a conversation with Reiki Voria on the podcast last year, and she's the head of global sales for IBM, that, you know, diversity is also gender, of course, right? And Maya Connett, she was a guest on my show. She's going to kind of come on the live here soon. You know, she talked about that. And then diversity is also backgrounds, personalities. It's diversity as far as like experiences, age, all of those things come into your organization and help different people as buyers, right? Because the buyers are going to be different. Your buyers are always a wide range of people, and they're just not homogenous buyers generally. But what happens in sales teams is sales leaders and organizations tend to default to hiring a lot of people who are like themselves. And then they have this homogenous sales team who's then selling to a very diverse population in the world. And then there's some challenges. So I always love that. I love the diversity in a well-running sales team. And that's why I'm supporting this organization. So make sure to check out the launch party tomorrow, January 15th. If you're watching this or listening to this afterwards, make sure to check it out. See if you can find a recording of it. Or hit me up. You can email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. And then I'll figure out a way to get you the replay, or we can just chat about it. And then last thing here, I wanted to share, because I'm super excited about this. A lot of people right now, it's 2021, kicking off the year, people getting into it, not just New Year's resolutions. I feel like a lot of people know that's not going to work, especially in this kind of environment. But what can you do to kick off your year from a business standpoint, sales standpoint, marketing standpoint? Maybe you're a solopreneur. Maybe you're a salesperson in a team or a leader for an organization, whatever that is. So my friend J.D. Gerschbein, who was my guest last week on the show, is hosting a virtual kickoff event, virtual 2021 kickoff event. I will be there. I am going to be one of the panelists, one of the presenters for a short segment. The way JD does these things, make sure to register, make sure to go, make sure to get there early and stay late if you can, because what JD does, it's not just a webinar where, you know, it's a bunch of people telling you a bunch of things and you're just overwhelming you. Some valuable things, like he told me, you have 5 minutes for your most impactful stuff that would help someone in 2021, which if you know me, we're 12 minutes in and I haven't even got to what I want to talk about. So obviously I can chat for a while, but it's going to be impactful. And then JD always makes sure that it's networking. It's going to be in Zoom. It's going to be video cameras on. Most of the time the mics are open, and wants people to interact, wants people to meet each other, to network, networking before, networking after. So it's more engagement than just a static webinar. Which is interesting because I built some webinars that I want to do for this year, and then it's making me rethink it because, you know, webinars are good, but right now a lot of people don't need more information. They need more wisdom and more things that they can use. And if you saw the post that I did for this live, you know, one of my favorite quotes is wisdom, you know, knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it into a fruit salad, right? And so there's a lot of people who have a lot of knowledge, but they don't have a lot of wisdom. And if you're in sales, here's the thing. Your customers aren't looking to you for knowledge. And this is where I see a lot of salespeople go wrong. And let's just jump into this. And again, for JD's event, make sure that you either hit me up on LinkedIn. You can hit me up anywhere on social where I am, which is pretty much LinkedIn or Facebook. You can always email me. And then you, or you can just search for it. Search for JD's virtual 2021 kickoff and you will find it. It's everywhere. You will find him. Okay, so let's talk about knowledge versus wisdom. So one of the things that happens a lot, and I still see this a lot with my clients, with coaching clients, with just the general selling public, is that they think that their place is still to hand out knowledge. And if this is you, this is really important to understand and kind of separate that. They think, these salespeople still think that their role is to hand out knowledge. And so what does that look like? Well, what that generally looks like is the salesperson who starts off sharing lots of things. They're basically reading from the brochure, lots of features, lots of benefits, lots of monologuing. And what happens is they are just sharing knowledge. They're hoping that knowledge is what will help somebody make the decision. And here's the thing, is very rarely, unless you're cold calling someone out of the blue and you're trying to get them to make a buying decision on the spot, which there's businesses that do that, unless that is your goal, unless that is your strategy, everybody that you're going to speak to has the ability, and just assume that they have done the research. They've already looked it up. They've already tried to figure out what it is that you do, what it is that your product or service is, and then how, and probably who you are as well. And so a lot of sellers just assume that their job is to educate and to inform. And some of that is true. Sometimes I deal with people who are selling something that the general public just isn't aware of. So this education cycle, this education curve is a lot because the salesperson actually has to educate the prospective buyer. And so that can be a thing in some industries, but generally not. So what you want to do is shift your focus as a salesperson to your role being wisdom. Now, what is wisdom? Like, again, that quote, which is from Miles Kington, about, you know, knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit and wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad, is wisdom is the application of that knowledge that's appropriate for that situation or for that person. So what your goal is as a sales professional is to understand your prospective buyer, understand their situation. Also, at the same time, in your head, understand what your product or service does for the right customer, right? For the right client. What is the value it provides? What does it do for them? How will it help them? And then your goal is to take their situation and what they tell you through your question asking process, and then marry that up with what your product or service does. And then that's wisdom. The wisdom is the application of that knowledge to help them. And this is a really key distinction. And really what this does is that ends up shifting the conversation. If you just focus on that one thing, the other stuff that I wanted to talk about today falls in line with that, and it just builds and builds and builds. Because the key is you, again, just think that most people don't need you for knowledge or information. If they do, it's going to be a little bit, and then it's going to be into the wisdom. So sometimes what a good sales cycle is, so we build some rapport, right, to whatever is appropriate for the situation. And then what we're doing is I'm asking you questions. I'm going through a discovery process. I'm figuring out who you are, what makes you tick, what your goals are, what your dreams are, aspirations, your struggles, your pains, whatever that is relative to that person and what you're selling. And then what I'm doing is I'm like a detective. I'm wanting to figure out who you are and what you're looking for, or what would help you, what would leave you in a better place after speaking with me, right? Whether that's my product or service or a recommendation for something else, or many times I've told prospective customers, don't buy anything. Stop calling people. Stop trying to buy this thing. Stop trying to sign up for this thing. It's not going to help you. That's not what you need. You should do X, Y, and Z instead, right? Especially when I used to help people in debt, help people in foreclosure. They were like looking for this silver bullet. And I'm like, that doesn't exist. What you need to do is this, this, and this based on their situation. And so the key is that you want to do that. Now, what happens sometimes, you ask questions, you get all the information like a good detective. You're just kind of looking for what it is that you could potentially help them with, what value you could provide. And then what happens is your conversation may shift into some knowledge where it's like, okay, let me tell you some information about this, this, and this, and then let me tell you about what we do and why I think that's valuable. Many times, especially when I used to sell directly with consumers, I would go 45 minutes into a conversation and I still didn't even tell them what I did or what we did as a company, like what the actual solution was or anything about us. One time, in fact, I was at the point where I was getting some really personal private information from somebody to help them, you know, with their debt, right? So like a social security number. And I was like, hey, wait a second. I realized I haven't even told you what we do. Right? Because I had built a relationship, I had built the trust, and they knew that I was helping them. And I hadn't spent the whole time monologuing. It wasn't about what I did, who I was, and what I thought was important, and what I was told to tell everybody. It was about them, and I made it about them. And then I actually stopped myself in the conversation to make sure they knew the path we were going on, because they were fully on board. And real quick, Chiquita Jones, amazing ops specialist, strategist, left a comment here. That's so important, differentiation between knowledge and wisdom. Thank you, Chiquita, for tuning in. So here's the thing, is that you want to make sure that you're focused on the wisdom instead of the knowledge. And when you do that, this next part becomes simple, which is everyone is different. Everybody is different. And one of the challenges, especially if you match these two up, is that a lot of salespeople think everybody's the same. A lot of salespeople think that your role is to just talk to everybody and spew the same things, and then they're going to want to buy, right? Because what you have is exactly what everyone's going to want. In fact, I had I'm going to say unfortunate experience yesterday where I agreed to a phone call. I'm not sure why. And then it was just a really rough sales pitch and conversation. I almost wish I had recorded it because it was in my Zoom. But it's probably best that I didn't. But that person made it all about themselves and all about what they were offering and their company, and thinking that everybody, of course, would want more leads through LinkedIn, right? Like, of course, everybody's going to want that. Not understanding like what I want, what I need, what volume of conversations I might want to have versus somebody else who's selling something different, and literally broke this rule where he just assumed everybody's the same. And in fact, you got to remember, everybody's different. To add to that, here's the key, is that they're also not you, Remember this. This is so important. They are not you. Now, what does this mean? Well, it means a couple things. One, and this is where, you know, the book that I mentioned, The Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections, can come in for part of it, is they're not you, which means they don't have your same preferences. Just because you think something is great doesn't mean everybody else will think something's great. One of the exercises I did yesterday with the students on in the class at Oregon State University, which is interesting because, you know, they're helping them learn about corporate enterprise, long sales cycles, buyer's journeys, you know, committees of buyers. And the exercise that I did with them, which is fascinating and was super fun, and they did really well, was here's the situation that happens in real life, in the world, is somebody watches a show or a movie and they can't wait to tell everybody about it. And they just go into this mode. Many people do. I know I've done it before, is go in this mode where they're telling somebody about that show and they tell them they have to watch this. You have to watch The Crown. You have to watch Game of Thrones. You need to watch Survivor. Oh my gosh, you have to watch The Bachelor, right? Oh my gosh, did you see that Marvel movie? You have to watch the Marvel movie and so on, right? And so what happens is people get in this mode where, because they liked it, everyone else will like it. Now, sometimes that's passion. Sometimes that's just excitement for something. Sometimes that's just not realizing like everybody is different and that maybe people won't like that. And you'll get different responses, right? Some people will say, yeah, that's great. I was looking for a new show. This sounds good. Some people might say, yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll check it out. They have no intention to, and they're blowing you off in the same way that your clients, your prospective clients tell you, hey, that let me do some research. Let me think about it. Why don't you send me an email and I'll get back to you, right? They're trying to be non-confrontational. They're just trying to blow you off. They're just trying to get rid of you, but they have no intention of following through. And so that's what happens. Or people who are just saying, no, I don't like that kind of show. I don't like that movie. I don't like those things. I don't like that kind of food. I would never go to that restaurant. And so what's interesting is the exercise that I had the students do was imagine that I went to them and said, hey, I'm looking for a new TV show to watch. What would you recommend? And what was interesting is how well they did in coming up with questions. And I just erased it off the whiteboard this morning, which is why my setup is like this, because I'm in kind of classroom mode. But how much they came up with the questions to uncover what it is that I would like. Not necessarily what they think I should watch, right? They came up with amazing questions like, am I watching it alone or with someone else? What kind of a mood am I in? When I'm watching shows, do I want something that's short or longer, funny, more engaging, more intense? What kind of genre? What subscriptions do I have or access do I have? Because a lot of times people are like, you need to watch Game of Thrones. I don't have HBO. They're like, I don't know what to do now, right? Like, I didn't think about that. Just assuming everybody has HBO, assuming everybody's going to watch Game of Thrones. And I bring up this example because this is literally what people do in real life, right? With conversations. And it's what they do in sales. And it's interesting because if you can observe that in your normal life, in your personal life, you're usually the same person you are in a sales role. And it's the same thing for me. And I've mentioned this recently. A lot of times I'm on podcasts and I'm doing shows and people say, okay, what's the number one book you recommend? And I'm always like, it depends. I don't know. Like, you know, I can't ask this host, like, tell me about your situation and what you're looking for. But I really dislike that question, which is what book do you recommend? It's why I always default to the five love languages, because no matter who you are, no matter what you do, you're in a relationship with somebody or interacting with another human in some way. And the five love languages can apply to anything. Other than that, what business book, what sales book, what fun book to read? I don't know. What do you like to read? And so look at that and keep in mind that everybody is different and they aren't you. As soon as you make that break, as soon as you make that division, go, everybody's different. They have their own reasons. They have their own focus. They do things their own way and have their own preferences. Then what you do is you shift that conversation, like I said, from monologuing and lecturing and educating to question asking and discovery and all about them. And it's totally different. If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. Now, here's the other part of they aren't you that I have found is, and I mentioned this in the objections ebook that came out, is that everybody has some baggage and some preferences when it comes to selling and buying. Now, a lot of times when you progress to a certain point, you will break free of those things or push those aside when you walk in the door for your sales role every day. But everybody has something, right? And so what does that mean? Well, and what does that look like? Let's say by the time somebody has entered into a sales role in any capacity, what's happened is they have been a buyer for some length of time in life, right? Even if you're 20 years old getting into your first sales role, you have been a customer. You have shopped, you have bought things, you have dealt with salespeople in some capacity. The older you get, obviously, the more interactions you have, and especially the bigger and different ticket prices that you've got, right? Whether you're buying a car, you've bought a house, you've dealt with salespeople at different levels that are, you know, going to be all over the map. What happens is most of the time we have some good experiences, but usually more unpleasant experiences, ones that leave more of a mark on us, ones that, you know, we remember and give us this different feeling. Again, this is what I talked about in the beginning of the show, is ones that make us hesitant in dealing with salespeople. And when we talk about order takers, and I use that label, again, I'll say this all the time. It's not a derogatory. It's not a permanent placement. It's not a stamp that says you are an order taker and that's your lot in life. It's more of a condition and a current state of sales effectiveness where instead of helping people move forward to making a buying decision, you're hoping that they make the buying decision on their own and taking orders when they're ready, right? And if they're ready. And so what happens is that you're a buyer out there in the world, you're a customer out there in the world, you have these experiences, some negative. And then what happens is you become a salesperson, right? Or you go into business for yourself, right? I meet a lot of people who are solopreneurs like myself, they're coaches, they're consultants. They've never really had sales training. They've don't really have a sales process. They don't have a specific way that they do sales other than basically putting together what they don't like as a customer, right? So instead of like, okay, how do I do this effectively? How do I move the needle? How do I move people through a persuasive conversation that's structured and effective, but still free flowing, right? So I have some milestones I'm hitting because I'm going from New York to California, but and I have some places I want to see along the way, but whatever detours happen, I'll handle it. So instead of doing that, instead of having this plan, instead of having the sales strategy built intentionally because I want to move someone from here to here, most times people enter into sales and what they have is, I don't want to do this because I don't like this. This part makes me feel icky when I'm a customer, so I would never want to do that to somebody else because I don't want to be a hypocrite. And I think salespeople do this and it's terrible and so that's bad, but maybe I'll take this part here. And so it becomes this Frankenstein sales process, usually built on what they think is the inverse of the negative experiences. And the challenge is that that then creates a order-taking sales process because what most people feel is that pushy equals manipulative, which equals that salesperson they don't want to emulate, and so they do it their own way. Now, what happens is that as that salesperson who used to be a customer, who's still a customer every day of your life, you're buying something or thinking about buying something or interacting with something that you've got to buy, right? Is that you also bring those preferences and those dislikes with you, right? I dislike people who are pushy. I dislike having to make a decision on the spot. I dislike the price conversation. I dislike when they don't talk about price and I have to ask because I feel like they're hiding something. I always negotiate on price because I want to get the best deal, right? So people bring with them this baggage. It's like a suitcase. They come, they go to work as a salesperson or they're selling in their own business. They open up that suitcase subconsciously, not even aware of it. And then they take out those things, put them all over the desk, set up their, you know, their toolbox of their own limitations and objections. And it happens. So, and I'll tell you, so mine, this is what I realized early on in my sales career with some guidance from my boss at the time in my first sales role is I really liked two things as a customer, no pressure. Right. If I get no pressure, but I get some information and some education and I get the questions answered to what I'm looking for, then I am a great buyer because I'll take action and I'll buy. Right. I don't necessarily go away to research endlessly and get stuck in analysis paralysis. Like if I go into an electronics store and I want to buy a TV and I've got no pressure and I've got some information and someone guiding me, I'm not walking out of there so that I can find the better TV or the better, you know, I will buy. So like I'm a really good customer that way versus other people who like literally will need to go research and then get stuck in this endless loop trying to find the perfect solution. So for me though, I like the data, I like the stats, I like the information, I like the choices. If I walk into a store, it's like, here's the one TV. For me, like, I feel I would be making the wrong decision because what are the other options, right? One option is not enough. So I go into the mortgage business. That was my first sales role, 27 years old, 2002, and in the mortgage business. And what I was doing was helping people buy homes, refinance homes. And so I would give people lots of options. I would literally, you know, collect their application, ask them lots of questions, figure out what made sense. And I loved having all the options available for different mortgage. We were a broker, which means we could get, you know, Chase, we could get Wells Fargo, Bank of America, all these other banks and lenders that no longer exist after, you know, the housing meltdown. And we would, I would put that together. And then what I would do is I put together a spreadsheet and it would be 8 to 10 columns wide. And each column was an option for a different scenario, right? So a first mortgage and a second mortgage. They want a 30-year fixed or a 15-year fixed. What about a 5-year adjustable and a fixed second? What about a HELOC second mortgage with a 2-year first? And so I would put together this, like, just this collection of ideas and options and, you know, what they were. And then I remember sliding this across to people, you know, when I was meeting with them and people looking at it and so many of them going, okay, we need to think about it. And then like disappearing until my boss sat in on a meeting. Cause he's like, you shouldn't be losing this many sales. And he saw it. He's like, no, you need to give people a couple of options. And what I was doing was I was breaking this rule. I was breaking what is I've heard now is I forget who it comes from, but the platinum rule, which is what you should be doing, which is everybody is different and treat them like they want to be treated. I was doing the golden rule by default, which is I want to treat everyone else like I like to be treated. And I was also putting on other people my objections and my limitations and my buying behavior, which is I like to buy like this. I like to have lots of options and no pressure. So I'm going to sell with lots of options and no pressure. Well, not that you need to sell with pressure and no options, but some buyers want that. Some buyers do well with more pressure, more focus on helping them move forward and not just letting them make their own decision. Other people at the other end of the spectrum, you put too much pressure on them, they're going to run away or they're gonna melt down and that's not gonna work. Sometimes lots of options good for that analytical person. Sometimes that could be bad because you're gonna put them into analysis paralysis. Other people don't like any options. They just want to know the one option that's best or the one option that's the most fun or most exciting or what everyone else is doing because their FOMO is so strong. And so That's the key. And this is why I say the golden rule is wrong-ish. And obviously, the golden rule is very appropriate and very correct when it comes to respect, manners, how you treat other people and treating them in the way that you want to be treated in just a general respect way. When it comes to sales, though, what you want to do is you want to focus on the fact that you want to not sell how you like to buy. You want to figure out how to sell for how they want to buy. How does your person want to buy? Now, how do you do that? That's usually a little bit challenging because you have to be good at understanding people's personalities quickly, understanding what they may like, what they dislike, or what you do is you have a general process that covers most of it, and then you're just going through, and then when people stop you or they push back, that's your indicators of where to go with the conversation based on selling to them. So big thing, and that's why I have on the whiteboard I wrote this morning after I cleaned it off, it said, everyone is different. And if you remember that, right, and if we talk about everyone is different, and then we talked about, you know, they aren't you, so they don't buy like you. They don't have the same hangups as you. They have their own hangups, so remember that. You know, they may not want your product just because you love it, right? Just because you love Ferraris doesn't mean everybody loves Ferraris. And so you've got to remember that. If you're in a sales role, the passion is important. The confidence is important. Understanding what your product and service does is so important. And like I initially started talking about, the application of that, the wisdom of that versus just the knowledge and just the brute force that a lot of salespeople do, but the wisdom to apply that to your individual that you're speaking with is the key to success. That is the key. If you combine these things, then that is the key to getting there. So it all really comes down to this. When you can take that wisdom conversation we had, and then you can also take what I've been chatting about now for, 20 minutes, and shift your focus to this one question. This is the one killer thing that you need to know. Now, this is not a killer question to ask. A lot of people ask me, what's the question I should ask? What's the one question? What are the questions I should ask? And this kind of goes back to my book recommendation and movie and TV and restaurant recommendation. It just depends. It depends on what you're selling. And the exact question that you're asking is not as important as the end result that you're going for and what you're looking for and what's at the end of the yellow brick road, if you will, or the end of the tunnel, the end of the trail that you want to achieve. That's what matters. How you get there is going to be a process and it's going to be different because everyone is different. So everybody's different. You can't script robotically a whole conversation. You can't script every question that you're going to ask or need to ask. If you did, it would be terrible. And I see a lot of new salespeople struggle with this because they want to be fed all the questions to ask. They don't close a sale. They get off the phone. Myself or other managers, leaders say, well, did you ask them about this? And they're like, no, was I supposed to? Yeah. Like, why didn't you think about that? And a lot of times what it is that trainers, managers, people in general don't understand what the purpose of the questions are. A lot of times they're just checking boxes. All they're doing is, as a salesperson, is I know I've got to ask some questions. I want to ask these questions. And then I want to get that part over with as quickly as I can, because then my goal is to get to my monologue, to get to my pitch, to get to my PowerPoint slides, to get to my demo, to get to my whatever, because that will sell it. Like, once they see it, that's going to sell it. That's going to be amazing. The problem is that they skip that question and answer step, which to me is the most vital part of the conversation. If you could literally do a 30-minute conversation with somebody and the first 28 minutes is rapport and then questions, and the last 2 minutes is the wisdom, right? That solution, that prescription, which is, hey, here, based on what you told me, here's what we need to do next. Let's do it, right? That's how easy it is, right? And no matter what you're selling, that's how easy it is. You're selling corporate or enterprise. That's how easy it is, because what you're selling isn't necessarily your $100,000 SaaS platform. What you're selling is the next engagement or the next step or the next part until you get to that final part. So it's very doable to spend most of the time rapport and questions, get towards the end and be like, this makes a lot of sense. Here's why I think it is. Here's what we do. Here's the return on investment. The next step is that we want to have a call. I want to book that now. What's better for you? Thursday or Friday? Which is better for you, morning or afternoon? Okay, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock? Your cell phone or your office number? Okay, sounds good. I'll talk to you on Thursday at 3 o'clock on your cell phone, right? Like, that's how easy it is. It doesn't have to be this long out thing. It doesn't have to be this long monologue. If you ask questions and build the value, which I've talked about before, they'll want to move forward. The questions, all you're looking for, what you're looking for, what you need to know, what your goal is with the question step is to answer this question that's on the screen. If you're listening to this, the question is, why do they want to buy? Why do they want to buy? Emphasis on they. What's their reason? What's their purpose? What's the value to them in why they would want to buy? Now, here's a question that came up in that class yesterday of students in that professional sales class is they said, you know, how long do you ask questions? How long does that process take? It depends. Again, that's my standard answer for a lot of things, but it depends. I've had conversations where this is my goal, right? This question, this part right here is my goal always. And in the first 2 minutes, either they're telling me because they just already know it, or I've asked just the right question, one and done. They're spilling their guts 2 minutes into the conversation. I know the answer to this question, and then now we're rolling, right? Now we're rolling. I know exactly what it is that they're looking for, and now let's see if I can help them, right? And then that's it. It's that easy. Other times, it's like pulling teeth, right? Like I told the class yesterday, sometimes it's literally like trying to get a teenager to tell you about their day over the dinner table. And it's just terrible and it's miserable. And some people are just shut down. Sometimes it's you. Sometimes it's the questions, whatever. Sometimes it could take you 30 minutes. Sometimes it could take you months to get this answer, right? If you're in a long sales cycle, depending on the conversations or however long that process is, sometimes it could take months and months to answer this question. To get the answer to why do they want to buy? And doesn't matter. Until you know that, you're hoping they want to buy. You're hoping that they know the reason why. If you don't know why it is and they haven't told you, I'm going to guess they don't know either. Most people don't know why they want to buy what they want to buy. Most people buy or go into a buying situation based on emotions. And then what they want is somebody to help them make the intellectual decision and make sure that it makes sense and that it's the right decision. Always remember, focus on why do they want to buy? Why would they want to buy? Why would this be helpful to them? That's your one goal. Now, again, how do you get there? Doesn't matter. And there's no specific plan. This is what you want to find out. And this is where salespeople go wrong. Again, if we look at that example of going from New York to California, where do I want to go? I want to go to California. Where do I want to go? Specifically LA. I want to be at this hotel in this location, preferably by this time. Okay, that's my plan. That's my goal. I have my destination. I know where I'm going to go. And how am I going to get there? I have no idea. There's an infinite number of routes I could take across the country with detours and stops and different adventures. Who knows, right? Or I could be like a cannonball run and where they're doing it as fast as possible and there's one common good route that's the most efficient way to go and you're going to race there as quick as you can from, you know, East Coast to the West Coast. And I think the current record is like 26 hours to go from New York to California. So just ridiculous. So you could do that path, or that strategy, or meandering and wandering. Your conversations will be any of those extremes. Again, the goal is, and how you know you've won, is if you've gotten to the destination. The destination is, why do they want it? Once you know that, then it's super easy. And I have been rambling a lot, but I wanted to give a shout out to my man, Nishant. So he said, yeah, this is earlier, much earlier, he said, yeah, it's really important to know what they want. And with that, modifying your conversation script as needed, which is perfect because that still applies to what I was saying, which is what do they want? Why do they want it? And why is that important to them, right? That goes back to that the stuff I was talking about where everybody is different. I was like, why is it important to them? Not why you think it is, not why your trainer or manager told you it's important to everybody, not why the founder is saying that everybody should want to buy or sign up for that platform, not what the brochure says, not what the website says, and all that. And Chiquita just said, I like the answer. It depends. It lets me know I'm not getting a canned answer. The person is interested in finding the right solution for me specifically. I love it depends. I use it depends all the time because it just – it literally depends. If you sell something where everybody wins and everyone gets the same thing and there's no variation and it doesn't really matter what someone's going to do with it, then this doesn't apply to you, right? So I think, you know, door-to-door magazine sales where everybody should buy a magazine, or back in the day, everyone should sign up for the local newspaper and get it delivered to their house every day. That's an everybody wins mode for the most part. Doesn't really matter if you want or not. Like, you should be selling that to most people. For everyone else, where there's a consultative sales process, then yeah, it depends. Right? It truly depends. And if we think about sales as a profession, like medical profession, right? Doctors don't have a one size fits all, right? No matter who walks into my office today, everyone's getting brain surgery, right? Like, no, it depends. It super depends. In fact, their process is built around it depends, which is figuring out, doing their exam, then coming up with some diagnosis, which may or may not be correct and is still set to fluctuate depending on what happens. And then there's a prescription for the solution. And then there's whatever happens afterwards and maybe readjusting, right? It could be, hey, we need to do brain surgery. That's a diagnosis. Here's the prescription, brain surgery because of this. Once we get in there, though, it depends. Things may change, right? Same thing when you look at it as a salesperson is when you're talking to somebody, your goal isn't to shove everyone into one box or make everyone feel like it. It depends. Now, I have sold many times. There's one solution. There's one product. There's one service being sold. At the end of the day, everybody is going through a journey, but they're signing up for one option. Now, it's customized to them, like how much of that option, but it's one option. It's one program. But it still depends. It depends on what makes sense for them and what we do with that and then where that fits in. So just remember that. I think that's great. And Chiquita, thanks for reminding me and pointing that out. The it depends is such an important piece of this. And just remember, just focus all the time. If you do this, right? If we go back, I'm going to put that back up on the screen here. Why do they want to buy? Remember that everyone is different. When you do that, when you focus on them and you come at it with the confidence, with the understanding of knowing what you have to sell, and you're aware, which we talked about earlier, of watching out for that baggage, watching out for your buyer baggage. That's a new term. Maybe I'll start using that. Your buyer baggage that you bring with you as a buyer out in the world, as a customer out in the world, the things that you like, don't like, the things that worked, don't work. Keeping in mind, as humans, we generally hold on to the negative experiences way more than the positive ones, which is actually an evolutionary strategy in our minds. Because, you know, if you think about it, primal days, long time ago, where, you know, eating the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing, being close to the wrong animal or whatever it might be was going to lead to danger, right? Harm or death. And what happens is, our brain wants to keep us alive, right? That's what it does. It wants to keep us alive. Like most species and creatures want to stay alive as long as possible. And so what happens is the human brain, that primal part, right, that amygdala, is constantly looking out for and holding on to danger signs because it's trying to stay safe. And that's why we generally hold on to negative experiences more to positive ones, and those imprint on us longer because our brain is just trying to keep us safe, trying to keep us from not doing that again. Right? Remember that time you touched the hot stove by accident? Yeah, don't do that. That sucks, right? Don't do that again. Remember that time you bought that thing and then afterwards you regretted it because you found out you got ripped off or you paid too much or your friends made fun of you for buying it? Yeah, don't do that again, right? Go into it more cautiously. Do more research. Take a battle buddy. Like whatever that is, it shifts how you want to buy. Then you get into sales. And then you think everyone's like you if you're not careful, if you're on autopilot. So hopefully that helps. Hopefully this is some good stuff. Thanks for everyone who is joining and part of this. I appreciate you. Thanks for some of the comments. Real quick, again, if you didn't catch it in the beginning, couple of things. Let's start with this one here. Girls Who Sell launch party is tomorrow. If you're watching this live, January 15th, it's at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. You can do the math on that. So that's on the 25th. So join that if you're listening to this or watching it after the 15th. Just get in touch with me. Email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com, and I'll either update you, share with you what happened at the event, what's coming up next, or see if I can find the replay if there's going to be one. It's also through Eventbrite. So if you just search either on LinkedIn or just Google it, girls with a Z who sell, and then launch party, even if you probably put in Eventbrite, you'll find it. It's free. Register for that. And then on Monday next week, again, if you're watching this live, on the 25th, that's not this Monday. That's the following Monday. The following Monday, I'm already tearing through January. So on the 25th, Monday the 25th, is J.D. Gershbein's J.D.'s virtual 2021 kickoff event. It's going to be super fun, not just because I'm going to be there and he's letting me talk for 5 minutes, which is going to be hard. I got to figure out what 5 minutes to do. It's a great way. He's got a bunch of people. And again, if you can make it, it's great because it's not just a webinar. It's not just a panel. It's not just a session where people are telling you what you could do or what could help in 2021. There's also going to be a lot of networking. JD is a master networker and congregator of people who want to just elevate each other. So there's always great networking events. I've been at his webinars before where it's claimed to be a webinar, and then everyone's cameras are on. It's in a Zoom. He may share his screen. Otherwise, you see everybody. You're meeting with everybody. You're chatting with people. There's networking before and after. Make sure to check that out. Make sure to find that. And then I didn't mention this, but I have my coaching program. Many people don't realize this, but if you go to Vox with Jason, that's V-O-X with Jason.com, I have a individual coaching and mentoring program through there. Now, Vox is an amazing app. I love it. It's a voice app. There's lots of voice apps, but there's some things that I love about this. Go to voxwithjason.com. If you're in sales or sales leadership and you're looking for mentoring, coaching, accountability on a more rapid scale, instead of the hiring a coach who you're going to talk to every 2 weeks on a 30-minute Zoom call, and then you're kind of on your own in between then, check out Vox with Jason. Totally different way to do it. Totally different way for me to support you in making the changes you want in your sales process, in your selling effectiveness, help you sell and lead in such a higher way at such a faster pace. So check that out. And that's it for today. I appreciate everyone who tuned in. If you're watching the replay, I appreciate you for watching the replay. Make sure to check out more stuff on LinkedIn. And thanks again for everybody who is in this circle, who tunes into stuff like this. I say this from time to time, and I really mean it. I appreciate the fact that people want to get better. People want to improve their sales process, and people want to improve it for themselves and then also for the buying public, and being on this journey together where we're shifting the way that sales is done so that the buying public actually wants to deal with a salesperson. They look forward to it. They appreciate the value, the wisdom, and what a salesperson and a company is going to do for them. And so I appreciate you being here. And that's it for this episode, this live event. I will catch you next week on the Authentic Persuasion live event. And have a great day, and make sure to become an authentic persuader. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.